It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God. Next album. This is for the children. You know what I'm saying? I got this idea from myself, of course, but this is for the children. I got.
Make this prediction. This will be the biggest upset in all fighting history. It'll be the easiest fight of my life.
You think your cousin can whoop me? You really do? Anybody on your one? Anybody in my family?
He's young. He's handsome.
They know it.
He's a poet. A prophet.
Goal ain't have a net. Who would have dreams and karaoke to cassette? I met OB as an OG in the taxi. Nah, I was legends, rest in peace, Pop's a legend, Mike Corey and Sean Jordan was the essence of the young chorus where we grew from. Seemed like a second, now they less important to the new sun. I guess today weighs more than yesterday. It's morbid to suggest that they will come for them too. When it's a brother younger than you, who humble and who? Used to coach him, now he coached him, blew up, who knew? He caught you on a rough night, you were stumbling through. Now he telling you to get yours, get yours.
All of you reporters made it hard on them.
It was just about a year ago, this month, of course, this month being NFL draft time, not quite a year ago to the day, but almost. When I told you guys that this was prime time for any Cleveland Browns fan, right? NFL draft time. This is the time for the Browns fan to shine. Well, guess what, y'all? Back by popular demand, my man Mark Hicks is back with the Mark Draft on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast for Saturday, April the 7th, 2018. What's going on? This is your boy Jay Hicks with the podcast coming at you once again. I think this is like the third, this has got to be like the fourth or fifth annual Mark Draft, man. We're actually getting up there in Mark Drafts. Mark, how you feeling this morning, or this evening, I should say?
I'm good, cousin. How are you?
I'm great, man. Again, we got another Mark Draft popping, and it's become one of our more popular podcasts. Like, every time I tell somebody about it, and anytime they hear it, they always love it. They say, when you bring a Mark back for the Mark Draft, you know what I'm saying? I've heard that on more than one occasion, and I mean, we got to get the people what they want, man. We got to.
Yeah, give the people what they want. You know what I mean? But I do want to say, because I was actually thinking about the same thing probably about 2 weeks ago. I was talking with my son about it. And I think this might be year five, which is really getting up there now. And you know, it's been an absolute blessing to sit here and do this with you, you know, and not just because of, for family reasons, but just from the standpoint that, you know, this is something I've always loved to do. And just to have the opportunity to do it, I really appreciate the fact that you use, your platform to allow me to, just to sit up there and do my little Mel Kiper impersonations and stuff like that. So I really appreciate that.
Oh, who's kidding who? You're way better than Mel Kiper. I mean, come on. what are we really saying here, okay? You know, it's people like Mel Kiper Jr. that get me on the air every April, because I gotta say what's really going on out here, and I'm not even plugged in like he is. That guy's way more plugged in than I am, obviously, but he
no doubt
the knowledge doesn't seem to add up, or he just says stuff to get ratings, to get clicks, to get people to pay attention, because that's why we do the Mark Draft, y'all. That's the beauty of it. And let me explain for those of you who don't understand, mock drafts are pointless, right? Because they're based solely off misinformation. That's the whole point. General managers do not want other teams knowing what their draft boards look like and knowing what their draft plans are. So there's no way that a source from inside any of these football teams is going to tell a reporter what their true intentions are. But yet these reporters take this misinformation and build their mock drafts off of it. It's built on flimsy logic from the beginning, and we are here to dispel all that. So what Mark does, Mark Hicks comes on our podcast every April. He blesses us with knowledge based on what he believes each team should do with their pick in the top 10. And that's how we do the Mark Draft, y'all. So knowing that, and knowing that our beloved Cleveland Browns are on the clock again. They live on the clock, Mark. They live on the clock.
Yeah, they live on the clock, man.
Yeah, apparently the only person who's not living on a clock is Hugh Jackson. You would think he'd be on borrowed time right about now, but no, they brought him back for year three in spite of being 1-31 in two seasons. Unheard of confidence from an owner for a head coach who has been nothing short of a spectacular failure to this point.
I agree 1,000%. And this guy continues to have more and more lies, like, you know, like nine lives like a cat. He just continues to still avoid getting the axe. And it kills me. And I'm quite sure you're going to, you know, speak about this. But my issue with the entire situation going on with the Browns in particular is the fact that you pretty much jettisoned everybody that was associated with last season of being 0-16. But yet, to me, one of the primary culprits in this whole situation still remains. And that just drives me nuts.
I mean, here's the thing, man. I respect the fact that the Browns want to have some type of continuity, right? Idea is that you're not going to get anywhere if you keep turning over the coaching staff and turning it over and turning it over. The players that you have in place, they're never going to be able to really absorb the teachings of that coach if the coaches keep getting turned over. So if you have a coach or a coordinator that's been telling you how to do things for your first 2 years of your career, and then they get canned, and then all of a sudden a new voice comes in that has a completely different philosophy, it's going to screw you up. It's going to screw up your development. And that's what you see.
I agree.
The Browns coaches get fired so frequently that there's never any sort of growth within the players. And so I can respect what Jimmy Haslam is trying to do from that standpoint. However, when you're calling the plays and you're calling flea flickers from your own end zone into triple coverage, that's not an exaggeration, ladies and gentlemen.
No, that's fact.
That literally happened. And so, like, when those are the things that are being called, when you see how the Browns continuously make the same mistakes every Sunday, when you see how they botch 2-minute drills and end of game situations, and how they always find a way to blow it, how they're never prepared, all the penalties, it's just, you know, it's kind of like, how is Hugh Jackson not held accountable in this situation? So it seems like everybody else is, but he might not be. But then again, I'm of the belief that the fact that he did come back, I don't think he's going to have the longest leash next season. So if for example, he were to come out the gate going 0-4, 0-5, 0-6, or 1-7, something like that, I think there could be some changes in store. And that fact could potentially influence what the Browns do at the NFL draft. Or maybe it doesn't, because John Dorsey, the new general manager, was brought in and Hugh is not his guy. So maybe he's not going to fight to keep Hugh Jackson. Maybe he's going to, you know, give Hugh enough rope to hang himself with, and then he's out the door, and now Dorsey can go out and hire his own guy. There's a lot of questions to be answered about this football team, Mark.
Yeah, I know what, and if I could, I just want to say this about Hugh Jackson, because you know, I've been going off on this clown for the better part of a year and a half. And I think it actually started with me back, not last season, but the season before at the Baltimore game, when he had Cody Kessler starting. They had the lead at the end of the first half, and he benched him in the second half, and they ended up losing that game. I think that was the turning point for me with Hugh Jackson. And someone actually tweeted and called him Hucifer after Lucifer.
They had to get biblical with
Jackson. So, I mean, because he's a pathological liar, and I tend to agree with that. I mean, players love him. My issue with Hugh Jackson is the fact that you come in, you're labeled as this quarterback whisperer, and then when you actually dig down and dig deep into the numbers, I mean, really, he really never had any quarterback besides Jason Campbell and 1 year with Andy Dalton that really show what type of any type of an improvement from a football standpoint as an OC. And I think that's the most irritating part, or the irritating factor, is that this guy came in with all of this huge resume and he just hasn't, you know, put up the goods. And when you draft a Deshaun Kizer, and I explained it literally, like, this guy could not play from the beginning of the season. Now, you could blame partially the front office because they never got a true veteran backup in there. They let Josh McCown walk away.
Oh, they thought it was a good idea to have been a quarterback room with no QB wins ever.
And quiet as it's kept also. Think of this, too. I mean, the loss of Pep Hamilton was actually a huge loss for them. Nobody tends to bring that up, But Pep Hamilton leaving, going to Michigan, was huge for them, a huge loss, because he had Kaiser had nobody to talk with, and Jackson was too busy trying to draw plays in the sand and doing flea flickers on the 1 and 2 yard line, like we was like you were talking about before, to mentor this guy. And I just think it was just a bad situation from the beginning. How can you get rid of the quarterback? How can you get rid of all the quarterbacks on the roster, basically? You get rid of all your quarterbacks, you get rid you hire an offensive coordinator, which means you are already spread too thin at doing both head coaching and offensive coordinating. You didn't have any type of quarterback coach or OC, and you still managed to – an 0-16, 1-31 over the last 2 years, and you still keep your job. I just don't understand that. And it's one thing to have continuity – but it's another thing to have bad continuity. Yeah, this like dude has been absolutely bad for 2 years.
Yeah, like if you have continuity, horrendous. Continuity's great, but if you have continuity with trash, like okay, so we got trash coaching, but we're going to bring back that same trash coach. Like, I don't know, you know. So, again, yeah. Q Jackson.
But the not to interrupt, but the problem is now is that, okay, you go ahead, you bring in John Dorsey, and you know that Hugh Jackson is not his guy. If, in fact, they go 0-4 in the first four games and Hugh Jackson gets fired, then it was an absolute waste. My thing is, why don't you just cut the cord now and bring in the guy that your new GM wants and just start over? Because now if you go a quarter of the season and now you cut bait, now you're going to get a whole new coaching staff, a whole new system for whatever you decide to do at quarterback, and it's just put you back a good year, and this year is wasted for no reason. I don't like that at all. So
yeah, I mean, I feel like they did this before, where they had the general manager and the head coach,
Eric Mangini,
brought on at different times, where typically you would want your general manager to hire your head coach or at least have a say in that. The cycles being off between those two positions kind of sets it up so that there's no synergy between the two from the get-go. So again, we're going way down a Browns rabbit hole, which I expected us to do, given the fact that A, we're two lifelong Browns fans, and B, the fact that the Browns have two of the top four picks in the draft. So this is going to be a lot of Cleveland Browns heavy content, as is every mock draft, because the Browns are always picking in the top five. By the way, Mark, I did double check and discovered that the first mock draft was in 2014.
Oh, wow.
Which means that this is the fifth mock draft for the NFL. We do it for the NFL and the NBA every year, but this is our fifth installment of the mock draft. So congratulations on 5 years, homie.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you for allowing me. That's great, man.
No doubt. No doubt. So again, going back to the Browns, they're on the clock again. And judging the history of the mock draft, there's a very excellent chance that this is going to turn into a two-part podcast. I'm just going to throw that out there right now. Because we're both pretty long-winded and loquacious guys, right? And we get going about the Browns. And, Mark, I am so excited to do this mock draft because there is so much stuff I want to talk about with you. And I actually typically wait to do the mock draft. We don't even do it this early most years. But, I mean, it's because, you know, there could be a trade, it could change things or whatever, and we want to do it closer to the draft. But I just can't hold on to these thoughts any longer, man. I have to get this out right now. So, with the first pick of the 2018 NFL draft, Mark Hicks, if you were running the Cleveland Browns, who would your selection be?
If I were the Cleveland Browns, my selection would be Josh Rosen, quarterback from UCLA.
Stunner. That's a stunner. That's a stone cold stunner. Nobody's really picking Josh Rosen right now in their mocks.
And no disrespect to Sam Darnold, who everybody is projecting to go to the Browns. And quite frankly, he just might. For me, though, personally, and just from what I look, and I will say this, Justin, I mean, we talk about quarterbacks a lot in the mock draft for football. I will honestly say that this year in particular, I studied these quarterbacks probably more than any other season that we've done this mock draft. I really dug in deep because I wanted to be sure about this particular position, because this is a critical position for the Browns. But I really dug into these quarterbacks, and for my money and just by looking at everything that I possibly could, Josh Rosen to me is the actual prototypical quarterback that I would love to have on the Browns. Now, if they went ahead and did Sam Darnold, I wouldn't be too upset about it. But for my money, Josh Rosen is the person I would want at one.
So we're in lockstep on this. I firmly believe, unequivocally, the best quarterback in the 2018 draft class is Josh Rosen from UCLA. Mark, for the life of me, I cannot understand why nobody is talking about Josh Rosen as the best quarterback in the draft, in spite of the fact that everybody says he's the best quarterback in the draft. It makes no sense to me. And it was something you said earlier about Hugh Jackson and how he was labeled this quarterback whisperer because he had 1.5 good years of Andy Dalton and Jason Campbell. And I started to make a point about PR. And I know a little bit of something about PR. And nobody has a better PR guy than Hugh Jackson until you start talking about some of these kids in the draft. But I will say that nobody has a worse PR guy than Josh Rosen. Because here's what we hear, and I've taken copious notes, as you have. I got my legal pad out right now, old school with it. I wrote a pen and pad, went old school.
Me too.
Okay, so we on the same accord then.
Like yes,
blood,
sir.
Right? Blood cousins, that's what it is.
That's right.
So let me, I'm just gonna throw a few questions out here at you, Mark.
Okay.
You just answer these questions, right? Based on the information
sure.
that you've heard on all these networks, on all these mock drafts, on all these podcasts, anywhere that you can consume football information, you tend to hear some things about these quarterbacks. So let me just throw these questions at you. Who's
okay.
the quarterback that you hear is labeled as the best natural passer?
It's Josh Rosen.
Who is the quarterback that you hear is the most pro-ready?
It's Josh Rosen.
Who's the quarterback that you hear that has the best footwork?
It's Josh Rosen.
Who's the quarterback that they say has the best overall mechanics?
Josh Rosen.
Who do they say is the smartest quarterback in the draft?
Without question, Josh Rosen.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Why the hell isn't Josh Rosen a shoo-in for the number one pick? I can't understand it. It makes me...
You know what? It's a lot of different things that scare off some teams. Also, it's stereotypical for NFL football guys, in quote-unquote. So... You know, I'm just gonna read you what I put down for my notes for Josh Rosen, because number one, and the one thing that I really love about him is the fact that he played in a pro style system. I mean that alone gives him a leg up on just about everybody.
He played under center,
Exactly.
Sam Darnold. Like I'm like you, I have no real beef with Sam Darnold, and we'll talk about him of course coming up. But Sam Darnold took every snap out of the shotgun, as did Baker Mayfield. Josh
exactly.
Rosen played under center as much as anybody. He and Josh Allen were the two of the four top quarterbacks that most people associate with the top 10. Those are the two guys that played under center. Darnold and Mayfield played strictly out of a spread system. So why
correct.
You would, you know, I mean, like, you know it's going to be an easier transition for Rosen because he came from a pro-style offense, as you pointed out. And something else that you referenced on last year's mock draft was the importance of getting some starts under your belt in college. Josh Rosen, 30 starts in college.
Yes, sir. And that was also another plus for me. You know, you already mentioned that he has outstanding mechanics, and especially footwork inside of the pocket, which, you know, allows him to slip past potential rushers. And, you know, he's not the most athletic person in the world, but, I mean, that he has enough athleticism to get by. And the most importantly, he stays in the pocket and he goes through his progressions, just like any NFL pro-ready quarterback would. He has an extremely high football IQ. He almost is too smart for his own good. Quick release, advanced ball placement. One of the things I really did was I watched a lot of both Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold because they're both on the West Coast, and there's a lot of games that they play late. So I took it upon myself, and in a lot of cases, I watched and DVR'd a lot of their games, especially this season. And the game against Texas A&M, when UCLA played Texas A&M, really stood out to me as Josh Rosen's best game that I ever watched him, because they were getting pummeled at the beginning of the game, and all of a sudden he caught fire, and that team came all the way back and won that game. It was probably one of the best college football games of the season last year for me. And he, you know, as I say, he doesn't have an out outstanding strong arm, but because of his mechanics and his release, his arm actually appears stronger than it actually is. But he has a good live arm. So, plus he's 6'4". He has a slight build, but he's a 6'4", 230-pound quarterback. So that, he also has the ability to put, a couple pounds on as far as his frame is concerned. The question or the reason why he is not talked about as one of the top quarterbacks, number one, is because of Jim Moore, because I have my issues with this. I think he's trying to personally set Josh Rosen up to play in New York. That's just my personal opinion.
I agree.
And which is why he's downgrading about fit and all this nonsense. But the injuries are a question. They're not the end all. But his shoulder injuries are a big deal, because especially in 2016, he had multiple shoulder injuries. There was questions about his leadership, although if you talk to his teammates never once questioned his leadership. It was just everybody else. They just thought because of his intelligence, he was too smart for his own good, and he always questioned everything. So they thought, he had the quote-unquote asshole tendency. So they didn't think or didn't believe that he was well-liked by his teammates. And because he's the smartest guy in the room, he's very outspoken. If you ever look at him in social media, he's always speaking about something, talking about something. And that's not good for him. But also, there's an underlining rule in the NFL, and a lot of people not really talked about this, but he comes from a very wealthy family.
His father's like an orthopedic surgeon or something like that.
Correct. And this is the thing with him, because NFL executives, for whatever reason, have this bias against rich kids, because they don't think that rich kids work hard. They don't think that they have the love of football like someone who doesn't come from money. And the fear is with him is that if he ever gets into a situation where the injuries continue to come back to haunt him, he could just walk away immediately and not blink an eye because he comes from money. And I think that's another part that's scary. And it's unfair. It's definitely unfair.
It's wildly unfair. You know why that's unfair? If he didn't want to work hard, why does he have the best mechanics of any quarterback in the draft, Mark?
Exactly.
Like that's my point.
He
clearly has been putting in the work on the practice field. Like, this is what bugs me. It drives me crazy. And I always think back to when Tim Tebow came out the draft, and everybody crushed Tim Tebow for his horrible mechanics coming into the NFL. And I remember the video of Tim Tebow practicing with the football up high by his ear, and he was chopping his feet, and they were just talking about how his mechanics are so, like, vastly improved. And I'm like, okay, we'll see when there's a live defense in his face. And what happens, of course, he reverts back to all his old tendencies, as one would expect him to do. Like, this is what quarterbacks do. When they're faced with pressure, they're not going to – that stuff's not going to be second nature. Like, that takes years and years of practice.
They're going to go back to what they know.
Right. It's muscle memory. Like, you think Sam Darnold's going to improve his mechanics, and then overnight he's just going to be this completely different guy with a revamped throwing motion, or Josh Allen's footwork all of a sudden is just going to be on point because he worked with Jordan Palmer or whoever. I think maybe he's working with Darnold. I forget. But the point being, like that, it doesn't come that easily. Like, these are hard habits to break because they've had tremendous levels of success playing the way that they've played their entire lives. And now they're being told, no, your mechanics are all wrong. You need to do it this way. Josh Rosen's already there. You know
he's already there. But to me, I'm going to tell the listeners right now, do not get me wrong and say, this is Mark said he looks like this or he rides up. No, his overall play reminds me a lot, believe it or not, of Peyton Manning.
Oh, Peyton Manning. I thought you were going to say Aaron Rodgers, actually. Even though he's not good outside the pocket.
No, don't get me wrong, because I'm a big Aaron Rodgers fan, so I get that. But Peyton Manning in particular, just only from the standpoint, because Aaron Rodgers is a little bit shorter, a little bit more athletic than Rosen is.
Yeah.
So I look compare him with Peyton Manning as far as his body type, his build, his minimum athleticism. But he's a student of the game. He's almost like high football Q savant, basically. So I think if he goes in the right situation, he goes into a team that actually is going to develop. Because even though he has the ability to play right away, I think he would be best served just to sit a year, just so he can get an understanding of pro football and the speed of the game and the nuances of the offense and things of that nature. And then he can come out like gangbusters in 2019. But I think his high ceiling, I think if he was really to maximize everything, he could be somewhere in an Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning type of mode. But on the flip side, if his becomes too smart for his own good and those type of things happen, you know, where he pissing off teammates and things of that nature, the low point for him could be somebody like Jay Cutler. And that's a dramatic drop in it, because the ability is there. It's everything else that the intangibles is what's the difference.
So a lot of people have made that comparison. They say, well, I don't know about Rosen. If you look at the leadership and the off the field stuff, you don't want to mess around and draft Jay Cutler. Like, I've heard that many times. Here's the thing. If his floor is Jay Cutler, do y'all understand that Jay Cutler basically owns every passing record in the history of the Chicago Bears? So
exactly.
That's not a franchise that's had a tremendous amount of success at that position, obviously. But
right. Nonetheless,
I mean, Jay Cutler can sling it. Jay Cutler has thrown a lot of touchdowns in his career. Jay Cutler has won a lot of football games in his career. Jay Cutler has led a team to an NFC championship game in his career. So when we say the floor is Jay Cutler, sign me up for that. Sign me up for
exactly.
that shit. If he's the floor, like, I don't understand. I don't understand what everybody else doesn't understand about this Rosen thing, specifically as it compares to Sam Darnold. And before I forget, you did mention Jim Mora. I wholeheartedly agree. Jim Mora Jr. is trying to steer him away from Cleveland. That's my take on it. Some people were saying he's trying to angle for a broadcasting job. Some people just saying he's just being honest. Or some people just saying he threw his guy under the bus. No, I think that he is deliberately trying to steer him away from the Cleveland Browns because they've been a train wreck of a franchise for so many years. Now, why
exactly.
is he doing that? Is he doing that because that's what he wants, what's best for Josh, and that's what he believes is best for him? Or is he doing it because Josh doesn't want to go there and this is his way of helping that cause? That's the question, because the only two things that are red flags for Josh Rosen, for me personally, one is the injuries, which you've mentioned, but, I mean, Josh Allen had a shoulder injury too. Nobody's talking about that, but
that's
one thing. And the second thing is, does Josh Rosen himself want to be a Cleveland Brown? Because if he doesn't, you probably have to go a different direction if he doesn't want to be there. But I agree with you about pretty much everything you said about Rosen. And a few other things that I wanted to point out, just specifically as it compares to Darnold, because he and Darnold have been kind of judged neck and neck since they came out of high school. They're both from Southern California. Rosen was a 5-star recruit. Darnold was like a 3.5-4-star recruit. Josh was one of the top players overall in his class. Darnold was like 150, 160 in that range out of high school.
Right.
You know, everybody says that Rosen, they worry about his injury history, which is understandable, but then they say that Darnold, they like him for his toughness. Anytime you ask somebody to say, well, why do you like Darnold? What is it about him that you like? Why is he the number one pick? And they say stuff like, well, he's gritty. He's tough. He's toughness. You know, it's a bunch of stuff that has nothing to do with football. Have you noticed that? It's got nothing to do with football.
But that goes back to that. It goes back to that situation where I talk about, because Josh Rosen came for money, he doesn't know about gritting and grinding and actually having to work hard.
You know what else I think it is, though?
For that.
I think it's the fact that Sam Darnold, I think that if he were a better looking guy, they'd be talking about him going to New York. I'm just going to put that out there.
Like,
there have been studies done that speak to the handsomeness of a quarterback and how that can actually play into their success. And you can look it up online. I'm not buying or selling, but I'm saying it exists. The fact that Sam Darnold looks like Rusty lets people believe that he's a perfect fit in small town Cleveland, Ohio. Like, yeah, they'll love him. They're blue collar. You know, it's like, nah, I'm a Browns fan. Give me the guy that's the best quarterback. You know, if there's a tall, handsome guy that throws like Peyton Manning, yeah, give me that guy. Like, I don't need all that blue collar stuff. That's a bunch of garbage that has been circulated in the media, just these buzzwords that have been thrown out for 20 years on sports radio. And it's just like, I don't care about gritty and you know, he's a guy you want to have a beer with, you know, his teammates will love him. Like, Josh Rosen's teammates loved him too. Like can we be real about this? Not only that,
right,
Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold shared a field earlier this year, and Josh Rosen outplayed Sam Darnold on the same field with inferior talent around him, mind you, compared to Darnold,
without question,
playing with superior talent. Rosen outplayed him. We ignore what Sam Darnold did against Ohio State, which was nothing. He was horrific in that game. He had a couple really nice throws, but by and large, yep, Darnold was underwhelming against the Buckeyes. There's all these things, and then the off the field stuff about, like, well, he's too smart for his own good. He asks a lot of questions. Like, don't you want your quarterback to ask a lot of questions?
Exactly. That's don't why I compare him to Peyton, because Peyton was one of the things that, you know, people loved about him, was the fact that he was he dissected the playbook. He looked at every single position on the field, knew exactly where it was supposed to go.
He swallowed that whole playbook. Like, he knew it front and back. Like, homeboy and draft data found the dollar bill at the end of the book. That's Peyton Manning. You know what
right,
I mean? Like,
exactly.
And that's exactly what I think Josh Rosen could be as a professional quarterback. And he seems to get no credit for it. Like, they hold that against him, the fact that he likes to ask questions and wants to be challenged intellectually. Like, yes, sign me up for the smart quarterback. This whole – the Rosen-Darnold thing, and just the fact that Rosen in general is – seems to be slipping out of favor with the Browns and is falling in all the mocks. I can't make one stitch of sense of it, with one exception, and that's I'm just praying that this is the world's greatest smokescreen by John Dorsey. That's
right.
All I got, Mark. If it ain't that, then
I'm in agreement with you, because think about it like this. He really has not said not one thing about Rosen at all this entire offseason. And I think, you know, that could play, you know, he's an old school GM, and maybe that could play to his advantage. He probably, you know, doing a rope-a-dope and trying to, and psyching out the entire NFL, you know, executive branch, and pull a rabbit out of his hat, and on draft day he comes out with Josh Rosen. I'll be ecstatic about it personally, but, you know, but I haven't found a valid reason as to why this kid should not be considered at number one. That's
exactly.
Just, for me, that it just doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And so we'll move on. We spent a ton of time on the first pick, and we'll spend less time on these picks as we go. But, I mean, there's so much to say about some of these individual players, and so much to say about the number one pick and the comparison between those two guys in particular. But, you know, we're hearing much more buzz about Allen and Mayfield even in play for the Browns than we are Rosen. Rosen's the one guy that seems to have been written off by everybody. And I just can't understand it, man. So the number two pick belongs to the New York Giants, a team that is much better than their record this past season indicated. They had a ton of injuries, including Odell Beckham. Odell Beckham has not been traded as of yet. Thank God he has not gotten traded to the Cleveland Browns. Your boy wrote a piece on Hip Hop Sports Report about why that would be a disaster for the Browns. Please go check that out if you haven't already. But Mark,
good read, by the way.
Thank you, sir. What should the Giants do with the second pick? And maybe trade down as a possibility. I'll even throw this out there. Mark, you've put trades in your mock draft before, but the second pick, the fourth pick, and the fifth pick all could potentially be ripe for a trade down.
Without question. So the only team that makes sense if a trade is going to occur would be Buffalo, or the Buffalo Bills. But my only concern with that is that, do the Giants actually want to trade down to 12? And that's the biggest question that I'm asking myself, because even though there was a lot of injuries, the Giants also have a lot of needs. And one player in particular is not going to make them a contender in their division, let alone a Super Bowl contender. They need some help. They need a lot of help. And my concern is that to drop from 2 to 12, you're going to have to ask for, you know, not only the two first round picks that Buffalo has, but I mean a multitude of
probably
picks. They really would have to clean house in order to do that.
Right.
So
especially
me,
considering what the Colts receive from the Jets.
Exactly.
Because you got to get more than what they got, right?
Without question. Because this is part – anybody who's coming up there to trade with the Giants is going to trade for whoever the Browns don't take a quarterback at one. So from that standpoint, to get a quarterback, you gotta pay a boatload. And I'm not sure if Buffalo is willing – to give up all of that stuff to get, you know, in this case would be Sam Darnold. But
who you have the Giants taking. That's what they should
do. Exactly. Regardless of who actually gets this pick, Sam Darnold is going to be the selection. So for all intents and purposes, the Giants stay. They need a quarterback, man.
I agree.
I mean, look, even though they had injuries, Eli Manning last year was absolutely dreadful.
He was.
He was dreadful. And he's 37.
And the streak died for nothing.
Gas Face Manning was. He is 37.
Died for nothing. They put Geno Smith in there for no reason. They didn't even start Davis Webb. They didn't even start Davis Webb. It was ridiculous.
They didn't even start Davis Webb at all. I mean, what? Come on, man. And so, I mean, they have to have a quarterback going forward. And my thing is, when you're at two and you know you have a glaring need like that, I heard everything from, they're going to draft Saquon Barkley. They're gonna build back up their defensive line since they lost JPP and again get Bradley Chubb.
That's the most common thing people are saying.
When you're that high in a quarterback class that's as deep as this, you have to get a QB, man. Because Eli Manning, at this point in his career, is nothing more than that bridge quarterback that everybody's talking about. He's nothing more than a bridge. He has at least one, possibly two more seasons left, and then he's gone, man. They're not winning the Super Bowl in the next 2 years. I'm telling you that right now. So they need to rebuild, which is why I would consider trading with the Bills if the Bills went up and traded with them. But at this point here, they need a QB, man, to start this whole thing all over again. And Davis Webb is not the answer. And Geno Smith is not the answer. And none of these other quarterbacks that they brought in are the answer. They need to start over. And Eli Manning can be the bridge until this quarterback is ready. So in this case, it's Sam Darnold, for a quarterback from USC at two.
I agree. And I know it sounded like we were hard on Sam Darnold in the last segment, right? But it's really
right.
Not even like that. I like Sam Darnold. I think that he has a lot of potential.
I do too.
I think, like you, I think as of today, it's probably most likely that the Browns will take him, and I will not be furious with that selection. I don't think it's the best selection. I don't think he's the best quarterback. I think he's got a lot of flaws. People are overlooking the turnover thing. They're just kind of brushing it off like, oh, he can fix that. We can coach that up. You know, and it's like, again, there's another guy out there that's not turning the ball over like that. But I think it's a legit concern. But I think that Darnold, he's got that backyard football feel to him. Like, he can run around. The escapability thing and throwing out of the pocket is a legitimate thing that he does better than Josh Rosen.
Right.
But I don't, my preference would be to get the guy who's better in the pocket. Like, that's how I would look at that. But that is still a strength of Darnold's. I think his arm kind of, it has a little bit of pop to it. He's not the strongest arm in the world, but just in terms of his, the zip on it plus the ball placement, he's got a really good combination of those two things. I don't think he threw guys open as much as Rosen did, but he still did it quite a bit at USC, and he has those wow throws. I think he has more wow throws than Rosen has. So, I think that there's still a lot of good things to like about Sam Darnold, even though, and he had 27 starts in college and only lost 4 games. I don't believe he should be the consensus number one guy
that
he appears to be, given the fact that he does very little things that are discernibly better than what Rosen does. But the arm talent is there, even though there's conflicting reports about how strong it actually is.
And I think most of it has to do with his actual delivery, that funky delivery that we were talking about earlier.
Man, and so I think that's a real thing. But I think that the Giants would be very satisfied with having him as their quarterback in the future. I agree that that's the right decision to make. Forget Barkley, forget Chubb. Go get your quarterback. The Giants never pick in the top five. The last time I remember them picking in the top five was when they drafted Eli. So
correct.
Go ahead and get your quarterback of the future and relax, because y'all don't have to worry about that anymore. You got a guy that a lot of people thought is the best in his class and 20 years old, coachable, seems likable. That's a great pick for them. So I would definitely roll with Sam Darnold if I was the Giants in this situation. Third pick belongs to the New York Jets. They traded up thinking that they would probably get no worse than the second quarterback off the board, but now it's looking like they might get the third best or the third quarterback off the board.
Exactly. So I thought about this a lot. The New York Jets, and if you look at all their offseason moves and what they're trying to do, New York Jets are trying to win as soon as possible. I was impressed by what they were able to do last year, despite not having a very good roster. They actually managed to actually be a very competitive team, and they weren't the pushovers that everybody thought they were when they were playing them. So, for me, their biggest hole and their biggest need has always been quarterback. They made the move to trade with Indianapolis specifically to get a quarterback. They thought that the Giants at some point would fall into that Saquon Barkley trap. I've always believed that the first three picks would be quarterbacks. So they're figuring, okay, at least worst case scenario, we're getting at least the third best quarterback in this draft. So if I'm them, out of the quarterbacks that are left, I'm taking Baker Mayfield, quarterback from Oklahoma.
Baker. That's what they're calling him. They're calling him Broadway Baker already.
So. Broadway Baker. And there's a lot of things, you know, from a standpoint of how he is as a college player that I like. But there's a ton of things that I don't like. Between him and Josh Allen, you know, Baker is the most ready of the two to play right now. I didn't mention that for Sam Darnold has to sit a year. So when he's with whether he goes to the Browns, whether he goes to the Giants, he has to sit a year. Baker is probably one of the guys who could actually start quickly. But some of the things that I do like about him, and you know, it's not a ton of things, but there's some things that I really like about him in particular, is that he started 40 games. Number one. TD to interception ratio is 119-21. Yes, he played in a spread offense. Yes, we talk about how the Big 12 have inflated stats. Some of the things that I like about him is his quick release and delivery. Very good. His accuracy is outstanding because, most importantly, he has very good ball placement. He's almost at 70% accuracy for his career. He is a natural leader. For whatever reason, the team gravitates around him, but And although his leadership is strictly emotional, he's an emotional leader. That also is one of the things that I don't like about him.
Mm-hmm.
He has above average arm strength. Although he is the check down king. He loves to get in that 20 to 25 yard range when he goes as far as intermediate throws. He loves those throws. When he throws the ball deep, his accuracy tends to wane a little bit. Very high football IQ. Loves football. I mean, he eats, sleeps, and drinks football. That's one of the things I like about him. And from a quarterback standpoint, he reads the entire field. He goes through all his progressions. Now, the cons, of course, his lack of height. Yeah, everybody said, well, Russell Wilson's only 6 feet tall. Drew Brees is only 6 feet tall. But they understand the windows that they have, where to throw the ball, the lanes that they can throw into. They utilize the offensive line in front of them a lot. Baker likes to run. Baker likes to run, especially when he necessarily doesn't have to run. That's one of the things that aggravates me about him, because he could actually stay in the pocket for a lot of these throws, and he tends to run. Problem is, he's not overly athletic. So he's not going to be able to run away from DBs and linebackers in the NFL. So he has to learn patience within the pocket. That's the one thing he's going to have to learn more than anybody. Plus, you know, like I said, like we talked about, spread offense is going to take him time to learn it. But I think he can learn it because of his passion and his desire and the fact that he eats, sleeps, and drinks football. But he is definitely immature. The asshole tendencies that we talked about before, he definitely has that in spades.
In spades.
And in spades.
Big Joker spades.
Exactly. And then when I talked about him being an emotional leader, he lets his emotions get the best of him. The Ohio State game was a perfect example, where plant the flag in the middle of the Buckeyes' O in Columbus. You know, those are the type of things that really bother me about him.
You know what's crazy about
his sideline antics?
So
that?
What's crazy about him is that he's the oldest of these four quarterbacks.
Correct.
By a significant margin, but he seems to be the most immature. Because you said
right.
All this stuff, you haven't even gotten to the arrest yet.
No, I ain't got to that part. I haven't got to the part that he has been arrested. And then also, he's always trying to make a play. Now, that could be a good thing, but it also can be a bad thing, because he will try to make a play even though a play is not there. Sometimes as a quarterback, you have to lose the battle to win the war. It's not a bad philosophy to take a sack instead of throwing it into triple coverage to try to make a play. So, and that's something he has to learn. That's discipline that he doesn't have right now, because I've noticed him doing that on a lot of occasions. So he needs to work on that. And depending on where he goes, and this is the biggest thing, and we talked about this last year, I'm not a big fan of Todd Bowles and their offensive system, but he can be a starter right away in the right system. His talent that he does have can keep him in the league from 10 to 14 years, as long as he can keep his emotions in check. My only concern with him going forward is when things don't go his way, when he is not having immediate success, how he battles through that. Because that's going to be key to him. That's going to be a telltale sign for him being in the league 10 to 14 years or being out in 3 to 5. That's the difference. If I could pick and choose where he could go, the best place for him would be New Orleans, to sit behind Drew Brees, because he's a rhythm quarterback. He needs a system that's going to get the ball out very, very quickly. And that in the throws and things that Drew Brees makes is exactly the type of throw that Baker Mayfield could. And he would definitely benefit from sitting in an offense that's similar to the Sean Payton's type of offense. Him going to the Jets, that's my only biggest concern, is the fact that I don't think they have the offensive coaches and capability to actually make this guy or put him in an offense that's going to benefit his skills.
So here's my big takeaway with Baker Mayfield. He is the perfect storm of, like, negativity. And that sounds that sounds much more harsh than it's intended to be. But here's what I mean by that.
Okay.
So you have the fact that he's 6 feet tall, right? I'm not convinced that he didn't wear platform shoes at the combine to convince people that he's a little bit tall, right? We got that. We got the fact that he played in the Big 12, and we know Big 12 quarterbacks have struggled coming into the league. Most of them are playing spread offenses. They don't play under center. They don't play defense in the Big 12, so he's going to put up these monster numbers that you have to take with a grain of salt, right?
Correct.
We know that he's got this temperament where he's got the chip on his shoulder, and he's very much not afraid to speak his mind, but it's kind of to his own peril at a lot of times. And you see the fieriness come out of him in ways where he's planting the flag at Ohio State. It was fun as a fan, but that's not what you want out of your NFL quarterback, to behave that way. Granted, he wasn't in the NFL at the time, but you get the idea. You have that. You have the crotch grabbing incident, I think, against Kansas. You have the arrest. Yep. You have the fact that he played from a spread offense. He ran around a lot. From what I saw on the film with Baker Mayfield, a lot of his best throws and his biggest games, frankly, he was throwing to guys who were just running wide open.
So
granted, he is accurate. I don't disagree with that, but it's way easier to be accurate when you're throwing to guys that are running wide open, right?
Yeah,
there was a
exactly.
lot of that with Baker Mayfield. And he has, like, a reporter from Sports Illustrated who's following him around everywhere, and all that dude is doing is writing glowing things about Baker and defending him at every turn. He's got, like, a camera crew following him, which is, I guess, he's trying to put together some kind of reality show deal or whatever in the draft process. Seems like some me guy type tendencies, you know what I'm saying? Basically, like, everything he's doing, like, none of these things individually means he will fail as an NFL quarterback. But collectively, when you take the sum of the fact that he's 6 feet tall, like, being 6 feet tall doesn't mean you're going to fail. But
correct.
The track record is guys that are 6 feet tall fail. Like, that's what the data says. So he's 6 feet tall. He's not CEO-like. He played in not a pro offense. He's throwing the guys that are wide open. He got arrested. He's a lot like Johnny Manziel in a lot of these behaviors, because he seems to come off like a me guy. He seems to run around and play outside the pocket. But he's not that athletic. I mean, he hates the Johnny comparison, but there's a lot of Johnny comparisons here. Put up huge numbers in college in a spread offense. Like, I just don't – there's just too many things here. There's too many flags that suggest, okay, when you put all these things together, he's not going to be as successful as some of these other quarterbacks. And so that's my thing with him. But I can't knock the Jets for making that pick, especially since they traded up. They had to get their quarterback, provided they don't take a running back like Saquon, who grew up in saying that he was a Jets fan. So Browns pick fourth. What are they doing?
Typically, the number one pick in the draft is supposed to go to the best player. With the importance of a quarterback, the Browns passed on that with the number one pick. But fortunately, they got the number four pick. So in my personal opinion, they need to select the best player in this draft, which none of these three quarterbacks, although they're very good or in certain areas, they're not the best player in this draft. The best player in this draft, hands down, is Saquon Barkley, the running back from Penn State. So if I was them, I would take the best player in the draft, and that's Saquon Barkley.
We have been doing this too long together. You know what I'm saying? And I know we're blood, so we think alike, and then we do these things together. We bounce stuff off each other. We've been doing this too long together, Mark. I mean, we both feel the exact same way about how these first three picks should go. I'm in lockstep with you all the way. And the Browns have to draft Saquon Barkley. I mean, I'm still seeing people debate it. I'm still seeing people talk about, running back, do you take a running back that high? I can boil it down to this. Is he special?
Yes.
Is he special? Because, a lot of people are making the argument that if the draft falls this way, three quarterbacks in the first three picks, that the Browns would and should take Bradley Chubb, the defensive end out of North Carolina State.
Right.
Bradley Chubb, from what I've observed, seems to be a fine football player. And we're going to talk about him in a little bit, I'm sure, but I'll just put this little teaser out here. I'm more impressed with Bradley Chubb's film and highlights than I am with Myles Garrett's last year. Without question.
That's why you stole my thunder, because that's exactly what I want to talk about later. We'll get to that later.
I didn't mean to do that.
I digress.
Yeah. So Bradley Chubb is nice. Like, don't get me wrong. He's nice. And I understand the importance of getting a pass rusher. I understand the importance of having two pass rushers. But the Browns have Myles Garrett, who everybody told me was a generational talent, quote unquote, last year. Which is a phrase that's getting used far too often. But
way too often.
So he's a generational talent. So why all of a sudden do the Browns need to turn around and give him help that high in the draft? Like, he's supposed to be Bruce Smith crossed with Reggie White, right? Like, this is supposed to be who he is. So why all of a sudden do the Browns got to turn around and give him help with a top four pick? I don't understand that point of it. Like, Myles Garrett was supposed to be the man. That's what y'all told me. You and I were skeptical last year, but and I think Garrett had a pretty good year, but he kind of underperformed given the hype. And so I thought Myles Garrett was supposed to be that dude. If he's that dude that y'all said he was, then the Browns don't need help on the defensive line. They need help on offense. And Saquon Barkley is special. Like, Bradley Chubb looks great. I don't know that Bradley Chubb is special. But when I look at Saquon Barkley, he looks like he's special. When you see him ripping off 50-yard runs, when you see him catching the ball out of the backfield, when you see him returning kicks for touchdowns, he looks like a special ball player, and that was confirmed at the combine because he blew everybody away that played his position at the combine. And so everybody's stuck on this running back thing. And apart from the fact that we've seen a lot of running backs recently go high in the draft and have had major impacts on their team and have carried their teams to the playoffs, I don't know that the gap between Barkley and these other running backs is as close as they say it is. I think Barkley's way better than Darius Geis. He's way better than Jones, the kid from USC. He's way better than a lot of these dudes, man. People look at the fact that Barkley or the Browns, they picked up Carlos Hyde. Like, that means they can't go get Saquon Barkley. Like, what?
Well, why not?
Why not? Because Carlos Hyde had two 900-yard seasons in his career.
Because he can't stay on the field for half of his career.
Exactly. He can't stay on the field. Like, and when you look at the Browns offense, they brought in Tyrod Taylor, right? He's an improvement, right? But he's nothing to write home about. And I like him, but he hasn't proved to be anything special yet. Josh Gordon is back in the fold, but Josh Gordon is not dependable because he's getting caught with weed or something, at every turn. He's never available because he's always getting suspended. Right. He's a joint away from getting banished for life from the NBA or from the NFL. You can't count on him. Jarvis Landry comes in. Another great pickup. I love that move. You love that move. Jarvis Landry is a slot receiver that has Tyrod Taylor throwing in the ball. So, and he was on Miami last year. Miami didn't do nothing. You know what I mean? So I like that pickup, but him alone is not enough to move the needle. Who on this offense is going to scare a defense or a coordinator or anybody? Who is going to be the guy that when they show Sunday Night Football and they show the little montage of the guys with their helmets off flipping the football in their hands in slow motion, and every team in the freaking league has a guy that does that except for the Browns.
The Browns.
Who's going to be that guy from the Browns? It ain't going to be Juice Landry. It ain't going to be Josh Gordon. It ain't going to be Carlos Hyde. And it ain't going to be Tyrod Taylor. So why can't we get a guy who is dangerous with the ball in his hands? And I love Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson ain't that dude. You know what I mean?
Nope.
We need Saquon Barkley in Cleveland. That's what Cleveland needs. They need a guy that they can forget the fact that he's a running back. He's a playmaker. How many touchdowns a guy have to score before the Browns draft him, Mark? How many touchdowns
he
in college?
Touchdowns now as we speak.
How many 50-yard runs? Dude, like they pass on Julio Jones. They pass on all these guys. Like how many 50-yard touchdowns does a guy have to have in college before the Browns pick him? Don't overthink this.
Right, they're making it more difficult than what it really is, and that's been my biggest problem with the Browns for the last 15 years is that they try to overthink things. They try to be the smartest people in the room, and they end up biting them in the ass every single time. Like, don't overthink this.
Like they've improved running back, sure, but they've improved a bunch of other positions. They improved defensive end too. You know, they went out and and signed a defensive end in free agency, so that means they can't go out and get Bradley Chubb. Like nobody has a problem with that. But for some reason, they had a problem with Barkley. Like, the shit just, again, just like the Rosen thing, it just does not add up the way that people have presented this anti-Saquon argument in the top four. And the people that are just so convinced that you can just find, like, I get the fact that Kamara and Kareem Hunt came out of the third round. I even get the fact that John Dorsey found Kareem Hunt. I even get that. But Saquon Barkley's don't grow on trees, y'all. And regardless of his position, like, LaDainian Tomlinson was taken in the top five. He's wearing a gold jacket right now. So if you believe that guy is that special, then just take him. Like, it doesn't matter. It does not matter.
It does not matter.
And here's one other thing. What is going to help either Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen or whoever? What's going to help that young quarterback more than anything else?
A running game, period.
Absolutely. Like, don't get me wrong. A defense is nice. A defense will help him very much indirectly. The running back will help him directly. There will be nothing better than for Rosen, Darnold, whoever, to have sat behind Tyrod for a year, and then they go ahead and put him in next year, and then he's turning and handing the ball off to Saquon Barkley, who has played, who has a season under his belt, but yet has not was not run into the ground because we also had Carlos Hyde back there shouldering some of the burden. You know what I mean? I mean, just like that sounds like a dream scenario to me on offense. And the way that people just act like Saquon, you know, oh well, he only had four 100-yard games. Like, really? Well, they were whooping teams in some of those games. They didn't need to run him into the ground. Or how about the fact that he had 170 yards receiving in some of those games? Or how about the fact that he may have had only 30 yards rushing, but he returned a kick for a touchdown? Or he had 30 yards rushing, but he still scored twice in that game. Like, he's still finding a way to have an impact. And regardless of the fact that he may have not had a ton of 100-yard games, he still averaged 6 yards a carry for the season, and he averaged 6 yards a carry pretty much every year he was in college. People are just out of their minds if they think that this dude is nothing less than a can't-miss prospect. So I'm off my soapbox, man. Anything else you wanted to add on that before we move on?
No, I mean, for a team that has always had trouble scoring touchdowns, to me, it just makes no sense for you to pass up on a guy who scores touchdowns. It just makes no sense to me. I mean, it's so Cleveland Browns of them to pass on a guy. Oh, we don't need him to score touchdowns. We'll just rely on Tyrod Taylor to run for 13 touchdowns or throw for 13 touchdowns or give a couple over to Njoku and a couple over to Landry and we'll be fine. Nah, it doesn't work like that, man. And the bottom line is a running game, and we talked about this with Jacksonville last year, a running game gives the defense, it keeps the defense honest, and it forces them to actually look at your offensive running back as a threat. And most importantly with Saquon, what makes him special is not just, you mentioned, it's not only his rushing ability, but his ability to line up in the slot or come out of the backfield on wheel routes and beat every single linebacker that tries to guard him or a DB that tries to line up with him. He has that special ability that a lot of these other running backs who were taken high, like a Todd Gurley, like a Leonard Fournette, and all these other special running backs who are and Zeke Elliott, this guy is special because he does so many things with the football.
He's a better prospect than all those guys. He's a better prospect than all those guys. I mean, nobody loves Todd Gurley more than me. I love Todd Gurley. I love Zeke.
Yeah,
Zeke's a Buckeye. He brought us a national championship. I love Zeke. Barkley's a better prospect coming out of school than all three of those guys, and Fournette.
Correct.
And the Browns had three first-round picks last year and spent two of them on defense. When are they going to help the offense, Mark? The quarterback that they draft is not supposed to play this year.
No.
So when are they going to help this offense? They have to do something to help the offense at some point. As I look at this team as currently constituted, especially having lost Joe Thomas, they're still a bottom-third offense in the league. Getting a guy like Saquon Barkley can change that. Fifth pick belongs to the Denver Broncos. Lay it on us, Mark. What should they do? If you're John Elway, besides thanking your lucky stars that you beat the Cleveland Browns a bunch of times in the AFC playoffs, what are you doing with this draft pick, though?
They need – their biggest need is quarterback, man. And I wanted to also preface this this pick by saying they possibly – Denver, meaning – they possibly could trade up to Cleveland at four. For all intents and purposes, they never expected at first all these quarterbacks to go, that they would at least have their choice of two QBs by the time they got to five. But I think if Denver has an inkling that the Browns will trade out of four, then they need to trade up to four to get the guy that they want. And the guy that they're going to get will be Josh Allen, the quarterback from Wyoming. If they truly believe that the Browns are trying to get out of that pick to get more picks, which I don't think they are. I think it's about time for the Browns to just start drafting talented players and stop trade down. But if they're going to trade down, it makes sense for them to trade down one spot because they can still get the guy that they want in Saquon Barkley at five, and Denver can get the person they want, which is Josh Allen at four, and everybody will still get out. And they'll pick up a couple extra picks in the process, which, you know, it won't hurt anybody. But Josh Allen, to me, is the biggest boom or bust player in this draft. Mel Kiper, as you talked about before, has propped this kid up for the last 2.5 to 3 months. In the NFL Network, they weren't talking about him before, and Mike Mayock in particular, and all of a sudden he started talking about him being selected as the top player in his draft. And I just think that's the biggest bunch of BS that I've ever heard, because this kid, for all the quote-unquote things that he does well, is not number one. Is not the number one pick. And for all intents and purposes, this kid has to sit anywhere from 18 to 24 months before he should start. He has the most things that he has to overcome more than any other quarterback in his draft.
I don't disagree with any of that, but let me just say this, though. If you are drafting a quarterback that has to sit for 2 years – in the top five, you shouldn't pick him.
I agree with that, but you see what the desperation that John Elway has done. He took Paxton Lynch, who also was a project, and who also had, you know, should have sat for 2 years, and he didn't really do that. I mean, this kid got beat out by Trevor Siemian. That alone should let you know that was a bust of a pick. But Josh Allen, I will say this. Josh Allen has more talent than Paxton Lynch ever had. The problem is that his cons outweigh the pros for me. So for Josh Allen, he's an outstanding physical specimen. He's 6'5", and he's 235, 240. Big kid. Very athletic kid for his size. Outstanding arm strength. Can basically make any throw in the book. Very good quarterback IQ. Football IQ. He has a decent retention. He rarely makes the same type of mistake twice, and he has outstanding character. He still looks like he's 14. So he's got the baby face. He could be a face of a franchise. But my problems, like I said, the cons outweigh the pros. He's a 56% career percentage completion passer for his career at Wyoming. He struggled against Power 5 teams. So, you know, everybody's talking about, well, Carson Wentz came from there. But, yeah, he started in 27 games, which is not too bad. But against Power 5 teams, he played against four of them. Lost all four, was 51% completion percentage, three touchdowns and 10 interceptions against those teams.
Yikes.
And he wasn't against great competition either. It was like Oregon, Nebraska, like really garbage football team.
A bunch of defensive juggernauts in Oregon and Nebraska.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He's slow to go through his progressions. And while he has great arm strength, there's a difference between arm strength and arm talent. He has outstanding arm strength. Mm-hmm. But arm talent, to me, is putting the ball where your guy can get it and he can't get killed by a defensive guy. It's about your being able to make the proper read and put the ball in a place where your guy can make a play. I saw a film thing where he tried to do a check down to his running back, and he threw like 80 RPMs on a check down to a running back, pretty much knocked the running back over. I mean, to me, that's just a lack of control that, you know, you have to have as a quarterback. It's not just good enough to have a strong arm. He definitely has questionable decision making. He's extremely raw despite all of the starts that he's had. And like I say, he's a boom or bust player. He has to sit. I mean, he played in a pro-style offense, which should give him an advantage, but I will say this in his defense. He did not have any top talent whatsoever as his skill position.
I don't buy that, though. I don't buy it. I mean,
but, you're right. I agree. And I know where you're going. I know where you're going with this, because there's a quarterback in New England who's never had top talent in his entire career, but yet he still was able to make the other players around him better.
Well,
If you're a top five player, you should be able to make the other players play better around you.
Look,
regardless
I'm not going to rake Josh Allen over the coals because he's not TB12, the God QB, okay? Like, there's only one Tom Brady. I'm not going to hold that against him. But I will say that he's playing at Wyoming, so he's playing against teams like the Idaho Vandals or whatever. Like, he's not going up against top talent either, is my point.
Right.
So, you know, Josh Allen... We talked about PR before, right? And like the same, like PR plays a big deal in the NFL draft. We talked about it with Rosen and Darnold. It's the reason why everybody wants you to believe that Sam Darnold is bigger than Josh Rosen when he isn't. Rosen's taller,
right,
heavier, and has bigger hands, but nobody seems to care. And everybody says Darnold is bigger. Josh Allen and Sam Darnold must go to the same PR agency, because Josh Allen has shot up draft boards for no reason, dude. Like, this guy, he's the white Cardale Jones. That's what I call him. he's 12 gauge. If he was white, to me, he's another big-armed, inaccurate quarterback. How many times have we seen this movie before, man? Like, in Cleveland alone, Mark, do these names sound familiar? Derek Anderson?
Yep.
Spurgeon Wynn? Brandon Whedon?
Yep.
Brock Osweiler, Deshaun Kaiser.
Oh my God!
You could even throw Jason Campbell in there. He was a little more accurate, but like, all those dudes are big, strong dudes with strong cannon arms that were not the most accurate quarterbacks. Like, and that's Cleveland alone. Like, we've still seen guys like Jamarcus Russell and Cardale Jones, and we see these big dudes that can throw it through a brick wall, but couldn't throw a beach ball in the ocean if they were standing on the shore, man. Nobody was trying to check for Cardale Jones in the top five of the draft, and Cardale took a team to a national championship.
Correct.
But Josh Allen playing at Wyoming, of all places, completes 56% of his throws, and all of a sudden he's in play for the number one pick in the draft. He sucked against every good team he played against, Mark. You said it. You laid out the stats. He was trash against every good team he played against. If I'm the Denver Broncos, I am not picking him. And I wouldn't pick him if I was any of these teams. I would. If I'm Denver, I'm looking more at Bradley Chubb, Denzel Ward, something like that maybe. But I'm not messing with Josh Allen.
The only reason why I would consider it, they got Case Keenum.
Yeah, that's
and
true. So they can afford to sit him for a while.
They can afford to sit him for a while. And in the sense he's raw like John Elway was when he came out of Stanford. I bet you John sees a lot of himself in Josh Allen.
You might be right about that.
And you want to talk about destroying TVs? If the Browns were to draft Josh Allen at one, there will be a lot of TVs like destroyed in Northeast Ohio.
So I'm starting a GoFundMe account so that y'all can pay for my new TV.
But
I like my TV. My TV will be in pieces.
They'll sit up there and they'll say, "Well, we got Tyrod Taylor and we got Drew Stanton. There's no need to rush him. We can sit him and wait." But they wouldn't do that a year ago. with a guy who had better stats than this guy here. And that's what irritates the hell out of me with the Browns.
Yeah, they messed up Kizer.
That's a Browns-type move. DeShone Kizer had better stats overall, was a better prospect than this Josh Allen kid ever was.
We'll see what happens with him, but I'm dubious. I would stay away from Josh Allen. But as expected, this podcast has gone long. We'll pick it up with part two of the Mark Draft. This is Jay Hicks with the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. Thank you for tuning in to part one of the Mark Draft. Peace.